I'm in. Oh my goodness. General film or book idea or whatever. Book probably. Pulp Fiction. No, I mean, to write a story, a little bit like Monkey on a Stick, or what was this other one? Dial On for Murder or whatever. I mean, realistic. Really, I mean, if needed, interview people. And then, oh my gosh, the happiest could be that. What am I thinking about? Like the sannyasi, that's the one I'm thinking about now. For natural reasons, because just another one these days came crashing down. Now, in that book, whichever it was, there was a scene where one of the 12 or 11 gurus was there in his room and ended up having sex with a lady, a Sankirtan lady. Now, take that, but make it more character developed, that you are putting the dialogue there and how he seduces her. And the reasoning, how he's sitting there, I just went through it in my mind, but in that room, luxury, everything taken care of, all included, servants everywhere, and a whole crew of beautiful lady disciples and servants competing to get a little moment of darshan with the guru. And there you are, maybe a bit bored. Okay, coming down, giving class in the morning and chanting your rounds, and they serve the food, all that, and everything is just going by itself. and all you have to do regularly is travel here and there and take part in meetings and deal with problems and all of those things. If you're a GBC, otherwise, no problem. And then, of course, the continuous exposure to these beautiful ladies coming to you in those positions. Of complete awe and reverence and it starts to wear out certain parts of you, that staunch, bright, enthusiastic Brahmacharya who then became a sannyas, young, naive, and who is now sitting here thinking about women. You know, and that way it goes. And you may have sannyasis discussing this in between themselves and saying that, you know, don't take it too seriously, this sannyas. It's a role we have to play because it's needed for the society and for preaching. That's why Prabhupada gave out sannyas, and we all know it. It's a bit of a role play that we need to keep up for the welfare of the society and so on, right? But come on, I mean, we are men. What can repression accomplish? This kind of thing, you can just use any part of the philosophy any way you like, really. So he's kind of slowly sliding out on that little down, we could say, on that slippery slope, and then one day when you have that specific lady that he kind of likes, and I mean, she's really gorgeous, you know, and he can't stop thinking of her, and so he arranges that she becomes his whatever, cleaning his room or whatever, or he just calls her in. How's it going? You know, she's sitting on the floor with starry eyes. And he's just talking because he needs some company, really. Otherwise it gets really lonely here. And maybe he says that, maybe she asks and wonders, why did you call me in? And he frankly says that, you know, I just sometimes need someone to talk to. Or, you know, could you help me with this? Could you help me with that? And so it's not just calling in to associate with her, because that sannyasi doesn't really do that. It's blunt. So it goes like that, and then she is gradually, you know, he is gradually showing it, and she's gradually picking up a bit more and more that, you know.
Maybe she can sit in his lap for a little while or something. Sit here next to me. And he tests her before he can go. And then she feels uncomfortable. But you're not supposed to associate with a woman like this, Guru Maharaj. Yeah. And then he, of course, has a perfect explanation, saying, you know, listen, I don't know if you're ready to hear this, but I just got the feeling that maybe you are. But you know, there are different levels of understanding of this Krishna consciousness and this Bhakti Marga. In the beginning stage, there are this sadhana and these rules and regulations. But you know, Prabhupada himself said they are just to bring people to the human stage, because blah 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 blah. Because they're like animals, you know. But then as we go along the sadhana, you all find it there in the Shastra, then there's another stage appearing, Raganuga, and you know, by this, you know, Madhvendrapur said, now the rules and prints and regulations, I bid you farewell. And it can go all that. I mean, you can just use that philosophy perfectly if you know it like that, for a woman especially. But you know, Krishna consciousness with bhakti is really about love, right? That's all it is, right? And if that love is expressed, or rather that love is naturally expressed differently according to people. You've got friendly love, he's being philosophical and just listening. Oh. But then you have conjugal love. Maybe she says, well, yeah, well, but that's within marriage. And he goes like, well, of course. And he says, but you know, there is even a higher level of understanding of this, that all the marriage and all that is for keeping the social order among people who are still caught in the mundane world. But at a certain level, there's only the love there. Spontaneous expression of it is really philosophized, because it's basically like that. And I don't know if he goes that complete mental way, or if he is more, or maybe he puts his hand on her. Knee or something, thigh, and then, well, you know, and then And she goes, like, you know, she goes into the woman mode. What else can she do? She's in love with him. And, you know, all the disciples, girls are probably in love with their male handsome guru and all that. And that's the way it goes, right? So he does his thing, and of course she takes it as a service to her guru. It must be very boring otherwise to just sit like this with all these beautiful disciple girls around and blah blah blah. So she renders some service, makes him happy, and that's it. But no, there may be, he starts talking about love and this and that. It can go any direction we want. So we can have this. I don't know why, because I really sat down and I really tried to place myself in the situation of one of those sannyasis, how they would end up doing very strange things. And the one I can't even and don't even want to put myself into is the one that does this with little kids. Ugh. I mean, this first one, I can't relate to, I have to confess. I mean, it must be very tempting. But anyway, I don't want to think about that now, at least. It's I can't understand. I mean, if it's really true that there are so, it's so common that it seems to be, it's religious movements. Maybe it's, no, I don't want to think about that. So, anyway, I just thought when I spoke this that maybe, or when I thought this before speaking it, that maybe I should include this level of these kind of things too in my story, the happiness. And, but not only for writing scandal stories, but to show the reality there and show how that poor guy there took his sannyas when he was 30-something and now is sitting here being 50 and wondering what's going on and how to deal with that sex desire that all of a sudden didn't go away but actually came back, or whatever that could happen, or maybe more of a subtle nature or whatever, loneliness and need a companion and all these thoughts and the mental images first, because I think that may be even more common, but maybe even more powerful in a way. So, to show this and how, by taking on a certain garb and name and role, you're not automatically freed from the desires for the sense objects, as they call it. You're not free from the limitations, weaknesses of a modern man. Come on, just a few years ago you were a hippie on the street or a guy running around drinking and smoking and eating meat and chasing girls all over the place. You were not exactly raised in a gurukul, you know, celibate student and brahmachari by pious parents and teachers. And then wham, in all your enthusiasm and maybe urged by others, you took that lifelong vow, which, when you think about it, is a formidable vow. Did I just say that? Yeah. I mean, with a capital F, it's social suicide. You're supposed to be dead in society. Walk on your own as if you didn't exist, just depending on Krishna. But here, this role had developed of the sannyasi as some kind of celebrity person. Worshipped, put into a life of luxury and comfort. Being served delicious food every day, having servants making your bed and washing your floor and paying your bills and it was practically the opposite of social suicide. You became the an icon of a society, a mascot, a deity. Oh yeah, something went a bit wrong there. But what can you do now? So you can see how they go through these thoughts and how some try to handle it by turning off all their emotions and feelings. Some sneak away on their own, taking a walk, dressed in ordinary clothes, and then sneaking away to prostitutes and whatever. Maybe starting with some Thai massage parlor down the street. I mean, we can just show these, and then you have these grihastas struggling there with their spouse and their kids and their bills and their house and car, all these things that have to be maintained, and the neighbors and people looking down upon them because they're Hare Krishnas, and this conflicted situation, socially weird. I mean, they are almost treated as if they were socially dead or at least outcast. I mean, this incredible struggle. And the ladies, I mean, and the devotees there, you can even go back to those who try to live in the temple and try to live pure, and in a little hut there with their family, a hut which is like a fourth the size of the living quarters of that sannyasi for a whole family. I mean, I'm not making this up, I'm just describing how it was, and maybe still is somewhere. So all this we will show. Not to show that there's anything wrong with a specific person, but rather that here are a bunch of Western kids, or from all over the world kids, coming from a society which is very materialistic, very rajasic, tamasic, being brought up there and conditioned into that, and having habits and desires developing in there, and then all of a sudden they are finding themselves on the highest level of renunciation. And the worst is then how the Grihasthas, who have, say, a license for sex or whatever, they are not allowed to have sex unless they make children. So their life is even more difficult because they sleep in the same bed sometimes, maybe. At least they're hanging around each other all the time, and the man will, you know, they can, or a woman, I mean, can see the attractive form of the other young part. So so I mean, maybe we can, this will lead to showing how the society there became a bit neurotic, because that's what I would say what this leads to. On the one hand, this spoiled sannyasi, institutionalized, you could say, who finds himself more and more becoming a hypocrite, having that kind of conflict there within. Deciding maybe that this, the outside, the external role that he's supposed to play, is the one he will play no matter what, because that's his service to the movement. If he folds, throws his cards on the table, then it will be another scandal, and people will lose faith, and disciples will lose a guru, and so on and so forth. So it becomes a matter of pretending, keeping up, keeping the show running. And thus maybe they don't even notice what hypocrites they have become. But also that is abuse of power, or position, of a of the respect that one gets as a guru, sannyasi. They don't see that because that's what we people, humans, can do. We can mold our reality to fit our own desired version of it. So we can show that. And we just, and we show the, that actually through this conflict, I mean, and then we can look at the grihasthas then who also become conflicted because they have their life, their reality that they have to deal with. The kids and the diapers and the this and the that. And then on the other hand, the demand that they should chant the rounds and partake in the programs and do this and that. Be, and otherwise the devotees look down upon them, especially the Swamis. So we show the absurdity in this situation and how the reality slowly starts to come through the cracks and the facade. But then we can show how, well, it is actually about love. Maybe, you know, that Swami and that lady actually have started loving each other the way a woman and man does. Maybe they should have been married. Maybe that's why they met anyway, although he took that immature vow. So you know, all these kind of things, considerations can come up. And maybe he just quits and then they marry and they live happily together. What do the disciples do then? They freak out. And how to deal with all these things? And well, I mean, I guess we have to deal with the child abuse thing also. But I think this other one is a bigger one, actually. And either there is an abnormally high percentage of pedophiles in religious movements, or this is just a twisted emotionally, mentally messed up person driven by suppressed libido. I mean, probably a real fascinating case for Freud, and probably that type has been researched and investigated thoroughly by psychologists. So it's healing time, and that messed up Swamiji, neurotic, wretch, gets therapy or whatever, or the lady takes care of that, or I mean, all kind of interesting things. And then maybe to some this looks like the whole movement is about to collapse. What happens to all these strict gleaming swamis? But in all this, we find our hearts are softening. And now they have to deal with each other's realities, their feelings, and all of that. Can't pretend they don't exist and try to be someone they are not. And in all of that, they actually start to get more real. Because it's better to be honest about who you actually really are than trying to be something very fine that you are really not. Krishna appreciates that more. That from your position, whether it's grihastha or sannyasa or anything, live a life in the service and love of God and each other. And so we get into that, which then kind of opens up as an unexpected dimension, you could say. How the purity, the advancement in Krishna consciousness, real advancement, comes about. Not to race like a weather balloon up in the sky, higher and higher and more divine until no one can relate to you anymore. Because that's a bit of the impersonalist path. Because your life becomes very impersonal. But seeing that everyone is part and parcel of Krishna, so loving Krishna means also loving everyone else, not else, everyone. And expressing that differently according to the nature of that relationship. So I think that here maybe that should be the theme of the happies book. Now, I'm really, really into this plot here, the earthly Hare Krishna-ish part of the story, and I'm thinking how well it will work to run those two different storylines there. One of the, well, to introduce that multi-dimensional three worlds. Perspective, and I think that should be there from the very beginning, yes. And we should establish it somehow, starting in Goloka, so to speak. And then when we just, wham, come into this earthly world, into an actual modern setting, that even is placed in time, specific time, and we can talk about time also, why we call this time this and that number, and there are other kinds of time here. I say that time in the higher planes or planets is also different, and maybe time is an illusion. These kind of discussions can come up there. Preparing us for that, both such discussions about time and of space, preparing us for that fact that things are going on in different time and space frames. And we tell our story. And as it goes on in those different frames, I think that that is just a way of doing it that is very, very want to do, and I think it's possible. It could be very interesting, maybe even if it doesn't just turn out weird. So I'm just praying for inspiration and intelligence to do this, because there's no way I could write such a thing on just by my own. Skills, unless they're just given to me by special creeper, which is what I therefore now ask for.